I'm also upset at Western leaders for being hypocritical when it comes to taking action for Yemen and Palestine. A Ukrainian's life isn't worth any more or less than that of a Palestinian or Yemeni. We are all equal. We must condemn war everywhere. If you support Ukraine but not Palestine, Syria, Lebanon, and Iraq, if you condemn Russia but not Israel and the U.S., then congratulations, mate, you're on the highest tier of hypocrisy. Where were NATO, the USA, and their people when Israel was killing innocent Palestinian children? It's not Ukraine, it's Gaza, but no one stands for them.
Social media platforms have also been filled with comments criticizing different approaches by European countries in dealing with refugees. The Ukrainians fleeing the conflict in their country have received a warm welcome by their neighbors, including Poland. No problem with that. But these European states had a totally different stance back in 2015, when an influx of refugees escaping poverty and violence in Africa and the Middle East reached Europe. Some European authorities have even drawn a distinct line between the two groups of people.
These are not the refugees we are used to. Ukrainian people are Europeans. These people are intelligent. They are educated people. This is not the refugee wave we have been used to. People we were not sure about their identity. People with unclear pasts who could have been even terrorists.
Race and nationality again become important when people fleeing the Ukraine war are received. There have been reports of Africans being turned away at the border by security forces. Some of the journalists that were caught red-handed ended up apologizing for being, quote, insensitive. But questions remain that whether being a European means the mainstream media will be more likely to talk about their distress. Many may now hope that having darker skin or being from a certain religion doesn't make others ignore their pain and suffering.
It is unusually cold in Italy for early March. Forecasters have predicted freezing weather will hit the country from north to south over the next 10 days. Italians have been told not to worry about low temperatures for now. Their homes will be heated through the winter season. However, things could be very much different in the coming future. The government, led by Prime Minister Mario Draghi, has recently issued a decree in which, besides introducing a state of emergency over the conflict in Ukraine, it also referred to possible gas rationing following its decision to do without the Russian gas. Italy imports about 95% of its gas, 45% of which is coming from Russia.
Technically, Italy is already in a state of gas supply emergency. There is a plan in place at the Energy Ministry, which features three levels of intervention. The country will resort to the maximization of its fossil fuel-generated power in the first place. It will take years for Italy to replace Russian gas supplies. In the short term, only about one-third of the gas provided but Moscow can be sourced elsewhere.
In the wake of the Ukraine crisis, Rome is looking to boost gas supplies from other international partners. Italy is paying dearly for not having diversified more its energy sources and its suppliers throughout the years.
In an attempt to reduce Italy's dependence on Russian gas, Foreign Minister Luigi Di Maio has recently been to Algeria to discuss ways to increase gas supplies. Algeria is the second supplier of gas to Italy.
Italy held a self-destructive attitude when it came to diversifying its energy sources in the past. We used to have great gas suppliers such as Libya and Iran, but these countries were either thrown into a war or heavily sanctioned in the name of NATO's interests. And for this reason today, we depend very much on Russia's gas.
While the EU is expected to unveil a new energy strategy to reduce its member states' dependency from Moscow's gas, on Friday the Italian Foreign Minister Di Maio warned that if Russia thinks it can blackmail Italy on energy, then they've got their own country. According to some geopolitical experts, European countries must keep into account that Russia would be capable of turning off gas supplies to the old continent. Max Civili, Rome.
Thank you.
A huge number of Ukrainian refugees continue to arrive at EU borders in Poland, Slovakia, Romania and Hungary. On Thursday, EU Home Affairs ministers adopted the Temporary Protection Directive. It means the refugees can work and go to school in any of the bloc's 27 member states for at least 1 year.
If you compare to the refugees that came in 2015, how long time it took to have the proper decisions. For example, just to have their asylum applications processed, it could take years.
So, by the EU's own admission, refugees travelling here from conflict zones involving Western military powers did not and do not receive the same protection. Meanwhile, advocates are calling on the EU to pay particular attention to certain groups.
In general, people who are displaced in a forced way are vulnerable. But we want to call attention to specifically the situation of women and girls because they are disproportionately affected.
European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen travelled to Slovakia and Romania on Thursday to assess the refugee crises facing the two EU nations. She took the opportunity to try and apply additional pressure on Moscow.
The three waves of sanctions we introduced are already having an impact on the Russian economy and therefore Putin's war effort. And we will take additional steps if the situation deteriorates on the ground.
Non-EU country Moldova has taken in more than 100,000 Ukrainian refugees so far. EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell visited the country on Thursday to offer support. However, there is concern over the treatment of some who are trying to reach the EU from Ukraine. Senior UN officials are criticising evidence of discrimination by EU border authorities against African and Asian nationals attempting to flee the conflict. Rights groups are also condemning the racism and are asking EU leaders to remember the bloc's values they talk so much about. Jerome Hughes, Press TV, Brussels.
Al-Fajr cultural days have kicked off, but this time it is not held in the Iranian capital, Tehran. Rather, Beirut is hosting the event like many other Iranian art exhibitions held here.
Activities include many art activities, theater, music, exhibition, seminars and other activities.
The Iranian Minister of Culture opened the festivals with an awe-inspiring musical concert. Iranian musicians there are glad to be attending such an event.
I'm a musician from Iran. I play oud, a common instrument in Muslim world. I really like the Arabic culture, Arabic countries' cultures. By myself, and I think the collaboration between Muslim countries, it would be good. Something like Fajr days in Lebanon, and I really enjoy my stay in Lebanon.
The many facets of Iran's artistic culture have come all the way to Lebanon, from the folklore dress to post-Islamic calligraphy.
This exhibition is for Iranian exhibition for the Iranian handicraft for before Islam and after Islam.
According to organizers, this event is significant in that it represents part of collaboration between Iran and Lebanon. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The World Bank has recently approved a plan to use more than $1 billion from a frozen Afghan trust fund for aid in Afghanistan through UN agencies and charities. Afghan experts welcoming the move suggest that there should be a clear mechanism for disbursing the money so that Afghanistan gains the greatest benefits.
Allocating $1 billion as aid is a piece of good news for Afghanistan, but there should be a clear and appropriate mechanism so that the money is not wasted like hundreds of billions of dollars that were poured into Afghanistan in the past 20 years. I think, first of all, the UN should come to an understanding with the Taliban. Then they can assess needs or create jobs through developmental and fundamental projects.
This comes as unemployment, poverty and hunger crises are deepening in Afghan society. Afghans expect the Taliban and international community to create job opportunities, calling for unfreeze of Afghanistan's frozen funds and more aid to the country.
We have been experiencing a very harsh winter. Many died of hunger and illnesses. We neither have a job nor received humanitarian aid.
Following the Taliban takeover, the U.S. froze some $9 billion in Afghan central bank assets and large global funds to the country were halted. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless thou forgives it. And leave no grief unless thou takes it away. And leave no enemy. And leave no enemy unless thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names. In the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Russia's military operation against Ukraine continues unabated. What is evidently clear is that Russia will not halt its offensive until its goals are met, like what it calls denazifying and the demilitarization of Ukraine. Meanwhile, the West is pumping Ukraine with more arms, promoting fighting the Russian military machine. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at why the West is doing that and whether that approach will cost Ukrainians their country while the death toll continues to mount. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Don DeBar is a writer, radio host, and journalist who joins us from New York. Also joining us, Ian Williams. He is the president of the Foreign Press Association, who also joins us from New York.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
I'd like to welcome you both from New York, and I'll start first with you, Don DeBar. So what is Russia calling this? A campaign that is a special military operation is the phrase they used. It has said it has no plans to occupy Ukraine, and the Russian President Vladimir Putin says he wants a demilitarized, denazified, and neutral Ukraine. What do you think? Do you believe him? Or what do you think his intentions are?
Well, self-explanatory. Certainly, Russia, the nation-state
in the world with the largest, by far, land mass is not after a land grab. Certainly, the placement of U.S. Military forces along Russia's borders, the bellicose foreign policy towards Russia, for sure since 2015, 2016, when they were accused of meddling and stealing the election, and people like Jean Shaheen in the U.S. Senate were saying that their propaganda was an act of war with a body count, certainly have reason to be concerned with the abrogation of the the INF treaty, intermediate range missiles, and the open skies treaty during the Trump administration, which was actually so benign compared to the previous administration that everyone was calling Trump Putin's puppet. They have some concerns about displacement of missiles that can make it to Moscow from Ukraine in 4 minutes, and a policy of placement of troops, TRL, that are clearly intended not only for an invasion, but actually begin almost at the furthest into the Soviet Union that Hitler achieved in the 40s with his invasion.
Very well. Ian Williams, I saw you shaking your head, but I'm going to ask you what your response to what Putin has said, additionally to what I asked on DeBar. He has said the move was undertaken, quote, to protect people who have been, quote, subjected to bullying and genocide, and that Russia will strive, and this is a quote, for the demilitarization and denazification of Ukraine. What is your view?
Every word is a lie, and some are too. Denazification. His own Wagner Brigade of mercenaries have card-carrying Nazis in there. Denazification with a Jewish president? I mean, this man is frothing at the mouth. Let's get the facts straight. He invaded another country without provocation. They didn't invade him. He invaded them. He did so in violation of the United Nations Charter, which forbids the acquisition of territory by force and forbids armed action. He went to the Security Council, was defeated in the Security Council, and used an historical relic of a veto to do it. He went to the United Nations General Assembly and was resoundingly condemned there. He has now, remember, we're talking about protecting Russians. Kharkiv is a city that's mostly Russian-speaking. That's the one you've seen with bombs flying in there. Russian bombs hitting the Russian
people. Why is he doing that, then? Why do you think
he's
doing that?
This is the epitome of destroying a village to protect it. This is about Putin's power. It's not about protecting.
Let's get a reaction from Don DeBar. Don DeBar, go ahead.
I don't want to waste time on hysterical laughter. And the president of Ukraine is actually a paid professional comedian for most of his career. And also, on occasion, he's funny. I'm looking at the news reports today where Blinken announced that the United States is going to authorize, quote unquote, NATO countries to hand over, quote unquote, jet fighters to Ukraine. In other words, in essence, the U.S. is going to start conducting an aerial war over Ukraine because these planes are going to be backfilled by the United States, according to Blinken today. And you can't fly those planes without U.S. AWACS helping them to target and to locate the enemy planes. And so what we're talking about, while people are making up fantasies about what's going on, an actual, you know, moving up close to an engagement between U.S. and Russian forces in the air over Ukraine.
Ian Williams, now, let me jump in. Hold on to your thoughts there. Ian Williams, well, what he's saying, what our guest there is saying, basically U.S. is actively working on a plan to arm Ukraine more, and based on the most latest, as Don DeBar said, jets are going to come into. Why is the U.S. promoting this and other countries?
Pressure from the world.
Why aren't they
doing more? There are a lot of people who say they should actually threaten troops. Let's consider, since we're doing all this whataboutery, why is it that Russian armed forces are fighting in Syria to keep a barbaric genocidal dictator in power at the invitation of the government? However, when it comes to Ukraine, the elected government asks for arms to defend itself against an actual full-scale military incursion by its neighbor.
Do you think Ukrainian army can withstand
that? Nothing at all. Let's look at those conscripts they're sending in. The interviews of them are pathetic. These poor kids have been dragged They've been shoved into the army. They've been pushed across the border with no information. They've been told they're going to liberate. What do they see when they get there? They see civilians standing in front of the tanks.
Okay.
They see people in the houses that are being shelled and bombed from high altitude. This is just...
All right, Ian Williams, hold on.
Any civilized human being can condone what Putin is doing, which is why even China wouldn't back him, because they know he's pushed the envelope.
That's a good question.
We're going
to get to China. We're going to get to China a little later in the program. Don DeBar, go ahead.
First of all, I have to say that Biden reads his teleprompter better than he's reading the talking points here out of Langley. Almost every alleged statement of fact that you're making about conscripts, about all of this, complete fantasy. I'm talking to people that are on the ground there. They're telling me what they're seeing in front of them. They're telling me about Ukrainian soldiers putting their guns down and going to the camps of the Russians and having lunch with them. I'm hearing about and reading about also, even in Western press, about the Ukrainian army going in and taking out Azov Battalion in Mariupol, because Azov Battalion was preventing these civilians there from leaving the city on this guaranteed routes out that the Russians had provided. And so the actual Ukrainian army...
The one that they're shelling, that one, perhaps. That's Azov Battalion.
Okay, Ian Williams.
The guaranteed route out.
Ian Williams.
Yeah. Marked, the shell craters from the Russian army.
Ian Williams.
And you're evading the major point. The Russian army is in Ukraine. The Ukrainian army isn't in Russia. Who's invading whom? What special military operation is this? When the U.S. went into Vietnam, they talked about pacification. They talked about destroying villages to save them.
Ukraine is currently an American colony.
All right. We got to have one at a time speaking.
Kiev is being shelled.
Very well. Ian Williams, let me ask you this question, because I want to ask the same thing from Don DeBar. When you take a look at the Ukrainian army versus the Russian military, who is going to overpower the other? I mean, we're seeing arms flow into Ukraine in huge amounts, but we know what Russia's military is capable of. Based on your expert analysis, how do you think one measures up to the other?
I am an ethical analyst, not a military analyst. I think the Ukrainian army has done extremely well under the circumstances, because this was supposed to be
a blitzkrieg. But if you saw a death toll mount, would you not want to stop the war?
A blitzkrieg in which Russian armor would go in and take Kyiv. They have a column like a tapeworm stretched across Ukraine
for
40 miles.
Okay,
because it's run out of fuel. It's run out of food. It's being harassed by the locals. Its military equipment is being towed away by peasants with tractors. It's pathetic.
Okay.
But they've got a lot of troops. They have a lot of hardware and military equipment. And, the odds are on the Russians. But then they have to occupy a country where it is quite clear that they are detested and reviled.
Don DeBar. Don DeBar.
Even the Russian speakers
what he thinks. Don DeBar. Sorry, Ian Williams. Don DeBar, when you take a look. Thank you, Ian Williams. Don DeBar, when you take a look at the Russian military versus the Ukrainian military, one analyst has said that Russia is using 5% of its capabilities. When you take a look at Russia's military in your perspective, if it is superior or has far more capabilities than the Ukrainian military, wouldn't logic dictate that the president of that country should stop the civilian death toll of mounting and therefore put a stop to this, which is what President Putin has said, regardless of whether Putin is right or wrong?
I mean, the short answer is yes. First of all, you have a few difficulties, however, because Zelensky has been in Warsaw since last weekend. He's not even in Ukraine. He fled first to Lviv, or Lviv, depending on your preference, with the NATO HQ in Ukraine and the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine a week ago. And I don't know if he was in a suitcase for protection with them or on a leash, like a monkey on a with an organ grinder. But they fled by Monday, I believe. They started having press conferences with NATO's people from Ukraine in Warsaw. This was, by the way, while last
they
weekend,
had won.
They were
so
talking
you're ignoring
about,
all the pictures of him in the center there. You're all ignoring all the pictures. Compare Putin. He's at the end of a table. He's at the opposite side of a football stadium from his own cabinet.
Well, Ian Williams, let Don DeBar finish. Ian Williams, I'm sorry.
He's such a paranoid, crazy person.
Very well.
He does not trust his own advisor.
Go ahead. Ian Williams, I'm sorry. I'm going to come to you in a second. Dondebar, go ahead.
So I wanted to finish. So at last weekend when they were trying to negotiate for this past Monday's talks between Ukraine and Russia, Zelensky was insisting that they meet in Warsaw, despite the fact that Russia was saying, let's meet in Ukraine near the Belarus border. And the reason they didn't want to was because he was already in Warsaw. He fled the country while he has people conscripting 16-year-old boys. Okay, he's in Warsaw at the with NATO HQ and the U.S.
He's in Ukraine, and why would you go close to the Russian border when you've got a bunch of murderous psychopaths, including a president who kills his own opponents with poison darts, who poisons people in his own territory, who goes into Britain to poison, and he's supposed to get close to this?
Let's talk about the U.K. I mean, okay, the empire that never set the subject set on with the billion bodies around the world.
All right, if you both speak at the same time, we're not going to understand what you're saying, and I'm the third person. So let's stop that. Let's look at the assertive Putin that Ian Williams is against, obviously, what he's doing. Dondebar, I need to bring this side of Putin in the picture, but then get your analysis. So Ian Williams, Ukraine could cease to exist. That is what the Russian President Vladimir Putin has said. In a warning, if leaders continue to do what they are doing, saying that countries imposing a no-fly zone will be considered combatants. So Putin is issuing his warnings. Why is he talking in that level?
Remember, he has threatened the use of nuclear weapons. He is now a self-confessed war criminal.
My question is,
the nuclear option.
Why is he so assertive? Why is he portraying...
Not even Kim Jong-un has threatened the nuclear option. Putin has. That means...
Why has he done that? Why has he done that?
More to the point is he is saying... I am going to wipe out a sovereign country.
But why? Why would he say that?
In defiance of the UN treaty, in defiance of its own people, regardless.
Okay.
So when you look at Zelensky, is he Churchill or is he Stalin?
Okay.
Stalin could have surrendered in 1941 and saved lots of Russian lives, but he said not one step backwards.
All right. Thank you, Ian Williams. Let me get Dondebar in. Let me get Dondebar in. Ian Williams, please.
These people are remembered with some reference and reverence because they stood up against evil aggressors. Putin is an evil aggressor. Zelensky is standing up against him.
Thank you.
Amazingly so, by the way.
All right, Ian Williams. Dondebar, same question to you. Why is Putin coming out off so assertive and so extreme, in a sense, in terms of the warnings that he's issuing against Ukraine?
He said so himself. There's a knife at our throat. That's what he was talking about for Russia. The United States has been moving NATO forces, military forces to Russia's border on a steady march since 1989, really, when Germany was reunified, despite promises and assurances. Forget all that. Grown-ups don't believe what each other say, even with contracts. That's why they have courts and appellate courts and such. And that's where there are wars, too, by the way, because people breach agreements. But the United States has moved its military up to Russia's borders and been pounding on its chest and training the people of the United States to tolerate a war, in essence, and lying about how much they'll tolerate, like Reuters just did. Reuters said in a report on Friday that a poll that they had conducted this past week showed that 74% of Americans would tolerate or accept the need for no-fly zone over Ukraine. That if you actually go dig, because they had no links to any of the stories either on their own website or what was sent out, but go into their own polling company's website and find the questionnaire, that question was never on there. Uh-huh. And the only two closely related ones were 2-1 against. No troops to go there and no aerial bombing of Ukraine on behalf of Ukraine's government.
Okay.
So he knows what's going on. Right.
So let's get down to
support their president.
In Williams,
much lower. Putin has achieved Finland in NATO, Sweden in NATO. He'll probably get Switzerland in NATO.
I read that in the paper
he's
today.
Achieved an increase in military spending in all the countries of NATO, including Germany, which was thoroughly agnostic about this before. He has scored a spectacular geopolitical own goal.
Very well. Okay. Let me move on to this issue. This is a topic that we don't talk about.
Ian Williams. He'll be a waste of time he's finished selling reactors and dropping bombs on them.
Ian Williams.
But he will have lost.
This is a topic that's not talked about much. from what Putin has said, people may be dismissing it. But Putin has said about these nationalists, and I need for you to give us what your impression or understanding of it is. He says nationalists are using civilians as human shields. He said that at a press conference. He said this to the Turkish president also, in the context where he said actions of the nationalists, which he called the neo-Nazi units, look particularly cruel and cynical. They continue intensive shelling of Donbas and use civilians, including foreigners, who are basically taken hostage as human shields in Ukrainian cities and towns. Do you believe him? Is that what's happening?
No.
Okay, Don DeBar, what do you think?
It's obvious that that's what's happening. That's what's happening right now in Mariupol. The Ukrainian army thinks that that's what's happening, and that's why they killed 20 Azov members in their headquarters.
Ian Williams, you heard our guest.
I haven't heard that report, but if it's true, it contradicts what he's saying. It means the Ukrainian government is taking action against
Azov,
a militant militia there. So they are taking action against the people perpetrating these crimes. On the other hand, it is definitely true that there's a couple of 100,000 Russian troops inside Ukraine, unwanted by the people, shooting at civilians. Civilians who are demonstrating on the streets against them, who are standing in front of tanks and military equipment
rolling. Right, you've said that. You've said that.
Who do you see on this? You can see it plainly. This is an armed aggression against the people who are now united.
You've made that stance very clear.
Ukraine will never ever unite with
Thank
Russia.
You.
I thought Ukraine and Russia shouldn't have split myself, but they did, and they did so partly because of Russian arrogance and Yeltsin and American support on it. However, they have now split, and it's no more. It's less likely that Ireland will reunite with England than that Ukraine will reunite with Russia.
Let's move on. We just have a few minutes left. I'm sorry. Don DeBar, plain and simple here, a question that I want to ask you. What is the role of the U.S. here? What is it doing? We know it's providing arms and encouraging other nations to do that, but what is it instructing Ukraine to do here?
First, let's start with a telephone call made on February 4th, 2014, between Jeff Pyatt, who was the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine's elected government at that time, and Victoria Nuland, who was the U.S. Undersecretary of State for European Affairs, where they selected the people who were going to become the government on February 25th, 2014. Those people, in turn, set up an election for Poroshenko to become president, who was really the guy behind their grouping. This is after $5 billion of U.S. money was spent setting up the preconditions for this to happen. That government has been a satrap, a colony of the United States, since it was placed in power in February of 2014. And the first thing that that government did when it took power was declare war on the eastern part of the country and begin shelling it.
The one that was occupied by the Russian troops. I remember it well.
The body count is 14,000 Ukrainians thus far, 80% of them in the east.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ian Williams, same question to you, but the blame I'm going to talk about here and ask you is that Russia wants to replace the current government, and it's after what some have called regime change. At the same time, there are news that's seeping out. It's not verified, but it's indicating that the U.S. is also looking at the next government that should be there in Ukraine, in a sense, drawing the conclusion that it wants to beat Russia to the punch, I guess. What do you think is happening here?
The indications are, as I remember, the American officials said that the president of Ukraine and his government have set in place succession plans for if they are killed by the invading Russians. Now, that is a complete reversal of what you're talking about.
Sure.
They're setting up succession plans, just like the president and the vice president and all the rest of it. They will still have a functioning government so that Putin can't foist in his own government to negotiate with. The one thing, I repeat, once again, it's clear, and even the Russians aren't claiming it, is that Russia has very little constituency in Ukraine, that they will never get popular support, that they will have to forcibly impose an occupation, a quisling government, if they come in, that that government will then have no credibility at all. So it really is a busted flush. And everything else, it really is sort of nostalgia for the good old days of the Comintern and the Soviet Union, who we will always support because they're on the side of progress. The U.S. is Okay. Mustard flush in many ways.
I got one final question.
It's right. And I come from Britain where the Americans were evil, double dealing, but they did come to our aid in 1941.
Very well. Last question here. I have to ask Don DeBar. I'm sorry. Putin has revealed the conditions for a ceasefire, Don DeBar, but it's nothing new. Kiev must cease fighting and fulfill Moscow's demands in order for this Russian military operation to stop against Ukraine. Of course, we know what those promises are. And Russia is not coming short on that. So what are we looking at here? Is that going to happen, or are we still looking at Russia continuing its offensive until it obtains its goals?
Well, first, coming back to earth to describe the situation on the ground in Ukraine, the eastern half of the country not only welcomed the Russian military in, but in fact they've been crying for them for the last 8 years. One of the pressures on Putin, in fact, was the fact that the Duma, 2 weeks prior to the beginning of the operation,
was that the Duma he appointed, where if anyone speaks against, they get waltzed off by the police?
They're elected, just like the parliament in Britain. Let me finish my statement, please.
Go ahead, Condor.
They almost unanimously called on him to recognize those two republics. The reason are that they're people that have families in both places, and there's domestic political pressure across Russia for him to protect those people, and it was demanded by the people that live there.
I'm sorry.
When the troops arrived in the eastern part of the country,
DeBar, I'm really sorry. I have to jump in. Unfortunately, we're just fresh out of time. I do apologize. Thank you for both of you, Don DeBar. Thank you, writer, radio host, and journalist from New York, and also from New York, Ian Williams. Thank you for your input, writer, radio host. I'm sorry, president of the Foreign Press Association USA. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitaly and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en. From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Closer, Iran.
Hello.
I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Where is the lentil? And the legumes cupboard. Yes. And this is the lentil. Just a cup. I pour some in this plate. And then some water on it. And now I have to cover the plate with a clean cloth. And this is the cloth. And now I put the plate in a dark, warm place so that the lentil could sprout. This is called sabz-sabz kardan in Farsi, which means growing a green in English. It's an ancient tradition which we observe near the Iranian New Year. We put sabze along with six other elements, starting with the letter S, on half thin cloth, and welcome the New Year. Today we are going to take a tour to Tehran's streets in order to get more familiar with the spirit in the final days of the year in Iran. Nowruz is the first day of solar calendar year, the celebration of the Iranian New Year, and the most ancient festivities remained from ancient Iran. Nowruz is the celebration of the beginning of spring, which is called spring equinox. Iran is not the only country which celebrates Nowruz. Some other countries in the region also enjoy Nowruz and its festivities, including Afghanistan, Tajikistan, Georgia, Iraq, Turkey, Russia, India, Pakistan, and Uzbekistan. The United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, listed Nowruz as a cultural and spiritual heritage for mankind, designating the day as the International Day of Nowruz. In Shahnameh of Ferdowsi, we read that Jam, one of the mythological kings of Iran, while passing through Azerbaijan, got seated on a throne and was crowned. By shining the sun on the crown, the world got illuminated. The people got happy and called the day Nowruz and called Jam, Jamshid. This myth is representation of the commemoration of the end of winter and cold and the beginning of warmth, light, and life by Iranians. I am now in Tajrish neighborhood. In Iran, the last month of the year, which is called Esfand, is a very busy month. People come to bazaars for shopping and getting ready for Nowruz. Tajrish has a traditional bazaar as well as some other bazaars which are really busy in the final days of the year. Thank you.
I am now near Tajrish Bazaar. Here, there are vendors who sell sabze and flowers on the street. Those who have not yet made their sabze can purchase these ready ones. And the special flower for Nowruz is hyacinth. This flower is the symbol of spring. I'll buy two for my grandma and myself. I am now at a herbs store in Tajrish Bazaar. I'm here to buy some sumac for my half-seen clod. Sumac is a mountain shrub which has clustered fruits. The fruits are used as spice after being dried and crushed. Sumac is the symbol of patience in half-seen clod. Vegetable shop. What fresh, colorful vegetables are here. Oh, wow. The smell of basil is everywhere. I'm going to buy some garlic for my half-seen clod. Garlic has medicinal advantages and is the symbol of being away from diseases in half-seen clod. And let's go to this neat, beautiful fruit shop. Apple is one of the elements of half-seen clod and is the symbol of health and vigorousness. Here, there are yellow and red apples both. Both of them are allowed at half-seen clod, though I prefer red apples. Oh, these apples have beautiful red color. Oh, look at there. Samanu shop. Samanu is a type of food which is made by wheat sprout. This food is naturally sweet, without being added sugar. In the past, people used to cook samanu at home. The process of cooking samanu takes a long time and needs much patience. So, in today's world, which everything has become so rapid, people usually buy samanu ready from stores instead of cooking it at home. However, the samanu, which is made at home, has a greater quality. Fortunately, my grandma still observes traditions and cooks her own samanu at home. She also leaves my share aside. Samanu is the symbol of blessing and abundance. Well, one object is left. Coin. Coin is the symbol of wealth and property. Now, my half scene is complete. I wish you all the best wherever you're listening to this program.
Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.